This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan, and joining me in studio this morning, Noel Lim. It is 6 a.m. sharp in the morning, Wednesday, the 10th of February. And as usual, we've got some interesting stories lined up for you. But first and foremost, Noel, how are you doing 2 days before Chinese New Year?
I'm feeling really happy, and I think because also the shops will be open, more retailers are allowed to open now. That was Ismail Sabri's announcement yesterday. So I think that's some good news. Although I think the timing of the opening, we wish it was earlier, but I guess the government has to be, they had to take precaution, right, because of COVID-19.
Yes, for sure. And that, I guess we'll talk about that towards the end of the hour as well, as we take a look at the local papers and portals. Another interesting thing that's been happening, I guess, is the amount of attention that I think trading has gotten over the last 1 year, right? And we've seen the rise and not fall, but controversies around Robinhood and how it's made trading so, it's gamified it to a point where it's become, well, a sort of a game. And we'll get into that in about 10 minutes or so. But at 6:30, Noel, we take a look around the world usually. What are we talking about today?
Yes, we're going to be looking at Myanmar again, as well as the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump. And also Australia's media bill, I think, as they go loggerheads with Google and Facebook.
And before all of that, though, we're going to be talking about WhatsApp groups and whether, especially with how WhatsApp and text messages have exploded in the last 1 year, whether you're getting more stressed out instead of more social time from all the WhatsApp groups you're in. Let us know what you think over on Twitter at at BFM Radio or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Fiona Apple with Across the Universe. And I think something that's helped us connect in this universe while we are, a lot of us have been at home, has been the, not the advent, but the rise of digital communication, right? And yes, it was a powerful tool from before the pandemic, but I mean, WhatsApp saw a 40% increase in usage in March last year when the pandemic started taking hold across the world. But the thing is, when we take a look at it, while it has been a boon, and I'm very thankful for all the different technologies that have helped me keep connected to loved ones while we are separated, and I have siblings that are in different countries at this point, things like text messaging and especially group texting can be particularly stressful. Now, I don't know whether I'm alone in this, but apparently this article in the BBC shows me that I am not. Noel, do WhatsApp groups stress you out?
Yes, I think that's a short answer to it, right?
You didn't even hesitate. So
I think the upside of communication technologies just allows you to keep in touch with your loved ones, especially even people, long-lost friends from old schools and maybe old workplaces. So that's a good way to just keep in touch without having to necessarily meet up. So I remember last year when the MCO set in, and people were sharing a lot of news items, and it started to get repetitive. And so I decided to just exit out from some groups, because otherwise I think I was finding it just simply hard to cope. I don't have that kind of discipline like some people who can just let the messages just pile up, you know. When I see something, I just need to like clear it at the end of the day. So that was last year. I think this year I've decided to just make this, being more intentional about it. Like Facebook can consume a lot of my time. I'm pretty sure if I took a test, people could classify me as a Facebook addict. not so much Instagram yet, it's still more Facebook. And so I've decided now I'm going to reallocate some of the time to LinkedIn instead, because I find LinkedIn, whatever that's posted there, it's a lot more positive. For example, people don't complain about the government. So I've decided, you know, maybe LinkedIn will be more healthy for me. There are a lot more interesting articles there that I could read. And the only thing is I just don't find LinkedIn's user experience as easy as Facebook's.
See, the user experience point is very interesting, Noel, because platforms like Facebook, Netflix, YouTube, Twitter, they want to keep you on the platform. So they're doing everything they can to make it a more satisfying experience so you never leave. Oh, Instagram, how could I forget about that? So you just want to keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and consuming and looking at the ads and making their money, right? That's how they work. LinkedIn, on the other hand, has a different sort of business model. Being under the Microsoft umbrella, they've got a premium subscription, and it's also a very professional-focused social network, right? So even the content that's on there has to be of a certain profile. professional level, which can be quite refreshing. But the thing with just more coming back to WhatsApp groups for a little bit. So I've for a few years now perpetually turn on Do Not Disturb on my phone. So I don't get the buzzing from WhatsApp messages. I check my phone every half an hour or so. But I do get calls through that because I need that urgency, right? But what I personally, quote unquote here, suffer from here is the one of the commentators on this article has noted as the dreaded communication debt that we can now accrue by having asynchronous messages. And basically,
can you say that in plain English?
Basically, it's a communication debt from all the messages you've got on your phone and have no time to read, right? So let's say you are in a group text with some of your college mates, and next thing you know, you've got a meeting for an hour and you come out and there are 500 messages. Are you going to go read through all of that?
Yeah.
I can safely say I won't. And that's not going to happen. Even if there are 50 messages, I will selectively go through them. But there is a certain sense of, because of the urgency and the immediacy of texting, you feel the need to have to reply on the spot, right? Because it's supposed to be a conversation, but done in over text. So normally you want that to be free flowing, but with digital communication, it's a tool for you, right? You shouldn't be letting it, I guess, control your life.
Yeah, so I've decided to exit from more groups now. So I just focus on the markets-related ones and also the WhatsApp groups with very, very close friends. So that's how I'm just, maintaining that. Other than that, nobody really texts me unless it's something urgent. And of course, I keep the work-related group chats. And that's pretty much how I'm managing it. And I also now set aside time to just check those messages so I can just check them all and just reply everything within that 1 hour, and then I just move on my life. But it's because I think the nature of my work allows me to do that.
Of course,
I think for you, you may need to be more on call than me. So I can understand your challenge.
Ah, the life of a producer. Yes. We have to keep making sure that we are on types of things. But that's why I like just taking out the vibration part of it, and just that because it breaks my focus. I find when I'm working and suddenly there's like a bunch of messages coming through,
it's buzzing the way.
Yeah, because there's a certain Pavlovian response, right? Because it clicks in your brain that, oh, I've got to pick up my phone now. And I turned off notifications for all the social media apps. I don't want to see that. And it has helped over the last few years. But the group texting thing, Noel, I wish I was as brave as you and quit more groups, especially the particularly active ones. But I'm not there just yet. I've been able to ignore it. So I'm not so bothered by the groups that have the little message that say 500 unread messages anymore. If it's a work group or immediate family group, there are certain priorities I give to that. But we only have so much time in a day, and I think that there needs to come some sort of honesty with that you're not going to be able to talk to 500 people in a day. I'm not sure why I'm hung up on the 500 number today.
I think it's the Clubhouse effect. Have you been on some groups where there are like 500 people?
Oh man, Noel, that's a different story. I've just started on Clubhouse and it's very interesting, and they've totally hooked me. I'm getting notifications. I look on my phone, oh, this conversation is happening.
Oh, you need to switch that off now.
It's been particularly interesting with the social, with the personal finance groups. I'm seeing a lot of licensed financial planners. I've seen some fund managers on it. Some interesting conversations are happening, but we'll see how that plays out. But right now, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, a little bit more about gamification, but how has it impacted investing and trading, and whether this can be a dangerous slippery slope for new investors. Keep it here to the Morning Run on BFM 89.9. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Be a Rebel by New Order off their self-titled album, Be a Rebel. And this was released last year, and that is quite a funky track, I have to say. It was really brings up the mood this morning. And, I don't know about you, Noel. Actually, no, I do know. You've definitely heard about GameStop and what's been happening over the last few weeks. But I think what this is highlighted, I guess, is the raft of new investors, particularly retail investors we're seeing in the market over the last 1 year, since with all this liquidity and primarily with the rise of Robinhood and the accessibility it's given to everyone, really, or at least people with access to it, like in the US and things like that. But we're also seeing the brokerages starting to lower their fees and more people are going on on free platforms. But the thing here is, companies like Robinhood, this very tech oriented companies are using the strategies from Facebook and Instagram of keeping people on the platform and urgency to keep them trading. They've gamified trading, day trading. And I'm a bit concerned, honestly, because yes, there are day traders who do it professionally, but there are a lot of amateur investors that I know personally that are getting involved. And I don't know, what do you think about all this, Noel?
Yeah, so Robinhood, this trading platform, which has been really appealing, and I gather that it's been really appealing to millennials, for example, who may be opening up a broker account for the first time, and this is in the US. I'm not sure if they're in this part of the world, not yet, right?
No,
yeah,
not
just
yet.
Just in the US. So, but you know, with all this kind of latest financial technology app, I think they really do a very good job with their user experience. It really lures you into trading and makes it so easy to just trade, right? Just like maybe one swipe and done, you bought the stock or you've sold that stock and it's done, and maybe it doesn't cost a lot too. And then not only that, once you've bought a stock, and then they will do this whole celebrity,
yes,
a celebration thing with confetti and all that to say, hey, Yahoo, congratulations, you bought your first stock or you bought this stock and well done. You know, it makes you feel, wow, really so good, right? And then next thing you know, you'll be looking for another stock to buy because you are hooked on this, you know, this recognition, right, that Robinhood has put in place. So it's they really gamified it, like what you said. So I think the question is, I wonder if regulators are going to come and really investigate Robinhood more closely. I'm not sure. It really depends on the culture of regulation in the US. But maybe the US has to rewrite their regulations to cater for all this kind of behavior nudging kind of platform like Robinhood. They may actually have to rewrite some of the regulations to either warn investors to be careful about things like that or to discourage platforms from overdoing it.
This will be very interesting, right? Because this is the overall story we've seen with big business versus the consumer. Yes, we always talk about how businesses want to make good products and things like that. But at the end of the day, they're also looking at ways to hack the growth, right? Basically, everyone wants to hack growth. And how can you grow faster with the least effort? And things like behavioral studies,
economics,
all of this has looked into this. And, you know, food companies have done it with branding, colors. Oh, what colors stimulate hunger, things like that. Game apps have done it. Social media has done it. But the danger here with a trading app doing it is that it has a tangible, very material and immediate effect on your financial well-being. And in fact, this one of these articles that caught my attention is of the Barefoot Investor, I think made famous by the book called Barefoot Investor by Scott Pape. And he brings up the example of eToro. Now, in Malaysia, everything has to go through regulation, right? It's through the Securities Commission or we've got the sandbox as well. So things like eToro are put on a certain watch list by the SC because they're not regulated in this country. eToro has this copy trader situation. And basically the long story short from this copy trader thing is, oh, you're not familiar or you're an amateur trader? Don't worry. You can copy one of these other traders who are doing really, really well. These aren't professionals. This could be anyone and you're not really sure who they are. And one example here was that one trader who was particularly successful went on a 48-hour just craze spree and lost everything. And 1,200 accounts were linked to that individual's trades and also lost their money. There is so much advancement. And, you know, like we talked earlier, you know, advancement, accessibility is so important and it's given more people access to all this, basically the powers of capitalism. But with great power comes great responsibility. You know, I'm sorry to throw the quote out there, but it's so important to note that you have to be aware. It doesn't mean that just because you have it, you use it for the sake of using it. You have to do your own homework and do whatever you do. And very, very importantly, understand the underlying baseline of what you're doing. Don't be like, oh, the stock market is hot. I'm going to jump in. Oh, GameStop is now 17 times higher. GameStop is now trading below $50 now. The short squeeze is over.
Yeah, the fun is over, right? So I think why eToro got the attention of the SC is because the advertisement started to appear on YouTube, the YouTube channels in Malaysia. As in, like, if you were watching it in Malaysia, you will get the advertisement. So I think naturally they wanted to put it on their watch list. Another thing is, you know, basically it's just be cautious, right? Don't just simply copy people's trades. Even if you attend a investment workshop, you also shouldn't just blindly copy what the teacher tells you to do, right? Because there's always a strategy for each time, and you know, you also have to time your exit. So there is more, it's not so simple investing, but we shouldn't be discouraged from learning. And another thing is, trading is one thing, you know, what you trade in, what you invest in is also another. Now, there's a lot of interest in Bitcoins and people are recommending Bitcoins. I have friends also recommending, oh, you should buy this coin. I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe my next life or you know, when I start to swim in my millions of US dollars. Yep. So, yeah, you know, it's hard-earned money, right?
Yeah. And I think it's just important to be aware about these things. And, you know, there's a dark side to all of this new technology that we've gotten. And it's, while it's given a lot of accessibility, it has also put on a lot more responsibility and the onus is on you. You can't blame the fund manager for performance anymore. If you are getting involved yourself, it's only, you are the only person that's responsible for your money at the end of the day.
Yeah. I just want to quickly say this, barefootinvestor.com. I really like the last line that he put, right? You know, don't play the game, buy an index fund and just put it in the bottom of your sock drawer and never sell it. I think that's just sensible advice.
Yep. There's definitely a big case to be made for passive investing over the long term. This is just something, you know, something we explore on Ring & Sense every Thursday. Not every Thursday, but it's a show that we talk about personal finance every Thursday. But, you know, let us know what you think about all of this. What have you learned from the last year when it comes to investment and trading? And have you found any joy in, I guess, in using apps when it comes to financial management? You can let us know over on Twitter at BFM Radio or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We're going into the 6:30 AM News Bulletin, and to take you there, Rocket Man by Elton John. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noah Lim in the studio this morning, and that was Viva La Vida by Coldplay from 2008. In fact, fun fact here, Viva La Vida reached both top charts in the US and the UK, being the band's first number one single in both countries more than a decade ago, Noel. Wow, how time flies.
It is one of my favorite songs.
It is. It is a really, really nice song. But right now, while we're talking about how songs have done across the world, let's talk about the news across the world. And Noel, I think we're starting with Myanmar.
Right. So we're looking at this BBC article. So police uses force as protesters defy ban. Myanmar is going through its fourth day of protests. And so police have fired rubber bullets during a demonstration in the capital city. There was water cannon and tear gas as well. And so people were actually injured. I think someone was hit on the head. Doctors are saying they have seen wounds from live bullets. And, you know, protesters are basically standing up against a military coup that removed the elected government last week.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of these photos of the demonstrations online, and we're seeing that I think state media was calling for action must be taken against those breaking the law, but it seems like the protesters aren't backing down. And I guess this is how much they pride their democracy, right? I mean, something that they didn't have for a very long time. And finally, they had their elections, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. And now it seems, I guess you would be dissatisfied as well if something like that was taken away from you all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's like almost your freedom, right? Your democratic right has been just rudely snatched away. And so people were yelling at the police, you know, end military dictatorship. So I think the question is, what is ASEAN doing about it, right? So I think there's been some columnists, you know, some people may call them armchair critics. But anyway, this is what they are saying. ASEAN cannot stick to its principle of non-interference. Right now, seems to be some diversity in reactions. Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia, for example, have expressed concerns about what's going on. Myanmar, Philippines is a bit more removed. They say, well, let's just watch and see. This is an internal affair. And some countries surrounding neighboring Myanmar, for example, are keeping mum. Brunei, who's the chair of ASEAN, they say there has to be a dialogue. But it just ends there, right? I think each country are just so busy with their COVID-19 management. And also, really, I think ASEAN just has to forge a new way of engaging with each other. But I think the reality is ASEAN countries actually, they compete for FDIs, right? Do they really have an incentive to tell their members to, you know, smarten up, pull up your socks and, you know, have no violence? I don't think actually that motivation's that strong.
And I guess also just the power of ASEAN, right? Does it really have any tangible effect on the nations? Is it just a group of nations in name as opposed to the collective efforts that they endeavor? I mean, even when it comes to relations with China and the South China Sea, all this is done on a bilateral basis as opposed to as a group, because China refuses to deal with ASEAN as a group overall. And even if if they did, we're not sure whether ASEAN as a group will be able to come to any kind of agreement. But, you know, let's move on to some other article, some other news. Noel, across the world right now, or actually not right now, about half an hour ago, earlier today, we saw the beginnings of the impeachment trials, the second impeachment trials of former President Donald Trump. And it ended about half an hour ago with the Senate approving the constitutionality of the impeachment proceedings. The Senate voted 56-44, affirming that the impeachment trial is constitutional. I think there was some challenges to this, to the proceedings. I think there were some concerns that, oh, should we be impeaching a former president who's not in the office right now? Republican Senators Collins, Cassidy, Murkowski, Romney, Sassy, and Toomey all voted with the Democrats. Senate Leader Mitch McConnell, however, sided with a Trump defense on the question of constitutionality. This is going to be a very interesting trial to watch, or Senate trial to watch, because of the fact that it also shows which Republicans are willing to stand up for what they believe in, or at least how divided is the Republican Party right now. I think there are very strong doubts as to whether they'll actually get a conviction, because I think you need 2/3 to get that through. But here it's really a lot about symbolism, right? Because a lot of Republicans have asked for accountability for what happened on the Capitol during that insurrection. But what accounts for that accountability? What do they actually want? That's something we're going to have to see. And whether we continue to see this divergence within the Republican Party. And I think this is very well encapsulated by Mitt Romney, who has come out time and time again against Donald Trump to stand up for certain values. And in fact, I think recently he sponsored the Family Securities Act, which is a way of channeling funds to middle and low-income families, which is not traditionally the Republican stance on a lot of things.
So I think what is happening for Donald Trump is firstly now he has some trouble assembling a proper legal team, and that could very much just be a reflection of his leadership. He tend to be a bit of that divide control kind of personality, and I can imagine it's quite difficult to work with him. And then the question is, how long will the trial take? Most people believe it will be much shorter than the 3-week trial that the last time Trump was impeached. And also, will a second impeachment bar Trump from running from office in 2024? And I'm looking at this FAQ by The Guardian, and it says not necessarily. If he was found guilty, there's no immediate punishment since he is no longer in office. So the Senate, with a simple majority vote, could bar him from holding federal elective office in the future. So with the Senate split 50-50 and the VP Kamala Harris holding the casting vote, that could just pass quite simply. So, well, it's going to be interesting times for Trump. But I think at the end of the day, somebody has to be held accountable for those for that riots that happened in Capitol Hill.
And also just holding the office, the White House, to a certain standard, right? I think that's something that's going to be important, and something that we're all going to be paying attention to, or at least a lot of us. I don't know how many people actually pay attention to the details of what's happening, but the ramifications will be there for all of us and the globe and things like that. But right now, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, a look at the local papers and portals. So keep it here to BFM 89.9. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Sade with Paradise. Right now, we're taking a look at the local papers and portals. And let's kick it off here with the Malaysian Reserve I have in front of me, talking about the COVID-19 cases are expected to be double-digit in mid-May, and retail opens today. So I think based on the numbers we have at present, the health DG is saying that as long as everyone follows SOPs and stays socially distant and is cautious and takes, well, all the necessary steps, we could see numbers in the double digits by mid-May. And jumping over and I think to quote him here, if Malaysians comply with the SOPs, we can definitely reduce number of daily cases and also break the chain of COVID-19 infections. I think that's a great phrase to keep using, right? It's all about breaking that chain and then flattening the curve. And some states are have their R naught below 1 now. I think Sabah is at 0.8. Kelantan is also around there. Sarawak is at 1. And if we jump over to the news around retail, I think yesterday evening it was announced that retail sectors will be allowed to operate starting from today with strict SOP compliance. The senior minister, Dato Sri Ismail Sabri, said that retail businesses include apparels, fashion and cosmetic outlets, car accessories, sports accessories, photography studios and others that were not allowed to operate during the MCO 2.0. In addition to that, we've also got dine-in is now allowed at F&B outlets with two customers per table and 1 meter social distancing rules. Of course, I think another thing they've added here, this caveat, is that the number of people in the premise will be limited according to the size of the shop to ensure physical distancing. And I think something that the creative industry is going to be happy with is that they've also announced that the creative industry will be allowed to open again also from today, but following strict SOPs. What this exactly entails, I guess we will learn in time. And I guess, again, to reiterate, with great power comes great responsibility. Be responsible when you go out and do your shopping. I know a lot of people like to generally do their shopping for CNY much earlier. So there may be a little bit of a rush today and tomorrow to catch up with some of that shopping. Just be cautious, take care of yourself and adhere to the SOPs, right? We don't want to see another resurgence in cases.
Some people think that this ruling, this opening of retailers, it's a bit late because most people would have done their Chinese New Year shopping already. On the other hand, there are some people who believe that, you know, we shouldn't bend the rules and we should just be strict and just remain, you know, don't be like a lalang, so to speak, right? Just stick to the rules that we had originally agreed on about a week or so ago. So I think, you know, the government's always in a tough spot. So I think they're trying to listen to all different parties. So some of the retailers have extra SOPs. One of them is to actually wear disposable gloves if you want to go inside a boutique, for example. You know, so you cannot touch the clothes directly. You have to wear gloves now. So I think the Malaysia Retail Association is asking the government to give them more time to purchase the disposable gloves. And also they commented that we have seen the worst drop in sales compared with the first round of the MCO. And so we'll be speaking with Datuk Wira Amir Ali Maidin, the president of the Malaysia Retail Association. The vice president of MRA, and also Datuk Michael Kang of the SME Association. So we're going to be discussing the impacts of what the MCO 2.0 has been on the retail and SME sector, and as well as what they think about this new guideline. But I just want to also to take this time also to talk about that 3-day quarantine rule that Datuk Adam Baba or Dr. Adam Baba had mentioned yesterday, right? I think it just took social media by storm because he said that ministers who come back from overseas just need to quarantine for 3 days. And so NSD spoke to some health experts and they are saying that the median incubation of the COVID-19 virus infection is 7.7 days. So 3 days is really too short and it has no scientific rationale.
We've got some other news as well from yesterday. The committee to advise the Yang Dipertuan Agong on the proclamation of emergency has been announced as a 19-member independent committee, which will be headed by former Chief Justice Arifin Zakaria, who will be the chairperson. There are about a total of 19 individuals here. And if we just take a quick look, some of the names that immediately come to that I recognize here include Saifuddin Nasution, who is of PKR, and Anthony Loke of DAP, as well as Zulkifli Ahmad of Amana. I think those are the only three opposition members of MP here, but there are some lawyers, there are some industry folk, also a lot of ex-civil servants I see on this list here. And very quickly, if I jump over to the CEO morning brief from The Edge, the front page here is that they're going with TNB's Amir Hamza slated to take the helm at EPF. So this is going to be something that we're going to keep a close eye on, because in addition to that, they also note here that the Khazanah National's current managing director, Dato' Shahril Rizwan, is also believed to be leaving Khazanah. So some shakeups here, some of our two very influential statutory bodies, funds.
Yeah, you know, I just, you know, unfortunately in Malaysia, sometimes the rumors are true, but at this point, it's not confirmed yet. Mm-hmm. So we'll just have to wait and see. But it's really going to be a loss, I think, for Malaysia, right? I mean, of course, it depends where these two individuals may be going next. But, you know, these current institutions that they helm are really major. And it's really a shame, you know, if independent-minded professionals don't have a space to work in Malaysia.
Yeah, I mean, Khazana does contribute to the government and it's a strategic fund. But EPF, you know, is that retirement body for so many of us, especially working individuals. And a lot of our retirements are actually really contingent on the performance of the EPF. But, you know, as with all these stories, let us know what you think over on radio, over on Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We're heading into the 7 a.m. news bulletin right now. And to take you there is Jolene by Dolly Parton. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.